Oh, the stock market's at all-time highs. Everybody should be celebrating. Welcome to the new year. Folks, I hope this is the year that we have 12 straight months of famine, plague, pestilence, and recession. Although, so far we got one day in the book and it doesn't look like we're going that way. By the way, also, hello, and I wish you well, and I wish you all a happy new year. Hopefully, if you're bearish on everything, the entire world and the economy like I am, a terrible year would lead to outsized gains for you. If you're a Keynesian and you're listening to this and you're just long the stock market, I'm sorry, but I hope everything goes horribly wrong for you. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. By the way, this is the QTR Podcast. Today is January 2nd, 2020. First podcast of the decade, motherfuckers. We come in to 2020 with 2.1 million listens. We've amassed them in just like 17, 18, 19... 20 months, which is pretty dope, and I appreciate you guys very much. The people that support this podcast, my patrons, are people that make a monthly recurring donation to help support me, keep the podcast up and running, and also to support my bourgeoisie lifestyle, you know, caviar, super yachts, things of that style. Actually, folks, just trying to buy a couple bottles of cheap brandy every week and make the rent, all right? That's about it. So I do appreciate your donations. Thank you very much. Let's shout out some of my patrons. Then we're going to get started with today's podcast. First and foremost, my friends over at thetraderspath.com. I have been talking to Pete from The Trader's Path for about 8 months now since he's been a patron supporter of the podcast. And he is making big strides over there. Pete basically started his own investing day trading service when he got tired of all of the nonsense and bullshit from normal day trading services where, you know, some of them front run you and a lot of them don't have your best interest in mind. They have the interest of charging you money and making money off of you, but not really helping you make money for yourself. And Pete wanted to kind of change that. So he started his own service called The Trader's Path. If you're a day trader, it's a fantastic service. He provides you with daily leads on ideas that he has, daily watch lists on which stocks he's watching. There's a live stream that goes all day so you can follow along and trade with Pete and the community over there. They trade options and they trade stocks. They trade in red markets and they trade in green markets. So it doesn't matter if you're a bull or a bear, there's going to be something for you over there. They're also going to give you education and investor advocacy and just general all kinds of good stuff. If you're looking for a community to kind of surround yourself with and you're a day trader, check out The Trader's Path. The link's in the podcast description. And from what I know also too, from getting to know Pete over the last 8 months, he's an honest guy too. And that's something that means a lot to me. Although out there in the rest of the world doesn't seem to, nobody really seems to give a shit anymore. But for me, that's still, that's a big deal. All right, this podcast is also brought to you by my friends over at the Sanglucci Steam Room. Sanglucci will be on with me today. He is my homeboy. Charlie Bathgate, his partner, is also my homeboy. They have been kind supporters of the podcast for a couple months now. I appreciate that. These guys are masters in tape reading, options flow, identifying big money coming into the options market. They have a master course also on basically market psychology and how to follow where the big money is going that's available. You can get that through the link in my podcast description. And they also just released the 3LT playbook, which are Lucci's three rules for how he became a seven-figure trader and avoided the kind of shit that we're going to talk about on today's podcast. So shoot him a follow on Twitter. Shoot him a follow at sanglucci.com. Check out Wall Street Jesus. They're buddies of mine. They're good guys. They know what the fuck they're doing. They make money for themselves. And hopefully they can help make you money too. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Rumorhound. What is Rumorhound? Rumorhound is an artificial intelligence based service that takes all of the merger and acquisition rumors that you see on a daily basis. Fuck, I just saw two of them today. One of them was some chatter about WeWork. The other one I think was about, I can't remember, but I saw two of them today. And you know, people aren't even at work today. Everybody's hungover still from the new year. So on a slow day, if you're getting a couple of rumors, you should know that on a normal work week, rumors about M&A come all the time if you're a day trader, and you know this if you're a day trader. So what does Rumorhound do? It runs all of these rumors through their proprietary artificial intelligence-based algorithm that then helps, looks at things like whether or not the financial situation of the companies are viable, it looks at the source, and all of these proprietary variables turns around and spits out a recommendation to you as to how viable the rumors may or may not be for you to perhaps, if you want to make a trade or you want to take a look at what a trade would look like based on some rumors, this will hopefully guide you to the right direction. Again, I'm not an investment advisor. I don't give investment advice, but RumorHound might be a good toolkit to have in your toolbox if you are a day trader. And it's reasonably priced. I've seen the platform. It's badass looking. Check out rumorhound.ai. They are in my podcast description. Finally, folks, I want to thank out just some of my other patrons that have been with me for a while, like my friends at Corvus Gold, my buddy Monero, shipping analyst Jay Mintzmyer. We're going to try and get Jay on at some point this year also too, because he's another guy that I've known for a long time who crushed it, had a great year last year. Russ Valenti, Nicholas Parks, my friend Nathan Machado over at Investors Underground, Chris Bede, still hanging with me, brother. Chris Bede's been with me for almost 2 years, and I appreciate you, my friend. Ken R., Chris Boas, Crichton Titus, thank you, my friend. Ken and Mr. J.K. Cunningham. Oh, there, the fucking thing just fell off the desk. Stank Love and Brainerd Ferguson, thank you guys so much. Matt Merle and Jameson Trinker, and some of my newest patrons. Want2XL just came back. I think he went away for a while, and now he's back, but I'm stoked to have him here. Chris Hicks and Andrew Marsh are on with me. Thank you guys so much. My buddy Mike Fenderson, still wishing you well, brother. I see that you have stayed on with me, and I appreciate that. My homeboy David just signed up. Thank you, David. Christian A. And Tyler Sandifer, thank you, buddy. Nasir Ahmed. Matt C55. I think I know who you are, brother. Oh, I shot you an email. Thank you. Crichton Titus, again, you get a double mention, man, just for being a badass and signing up. Finally, Peter Theodorius and Lyle Engel, Collins Davis have all joined me over the last couple of months with Andrew Plotnikov. And since it's a new decade, we're going to take 1 second and just shout out some appreciation to some people that have been with me for a while, like Garth Palmer, who's been with me for a while, Jonah Johnson, my friend Sheer Luck is still with me, my girl Devin Christine is still in the house. Brainerd Ferguson, you're still here, brother. I think I may have said you twice, too. Not a very good use of time by me today, but fuck it. New year, new decade, doing whatever the fuck I want. You don't like it, fast forward it, or turn the podcast off. How's that for advice? Bertha Moreno, Craig Dosher, John Phillips, thank you so much. Matt Kroom, I still see you. My homeboy Jim Tilton, who is a fantastic bowler and a fine human being. My friends over at the Flow Algo are still with me. Travis Davis is still with me. Max motherfucking Mulvihill, still in the house, going on 2 years. Max Mulvihill, my oldest patron. We're taking it to the new decade, Max. Thank you so much, my brother. Joe Farber, and shit, there's a bunch of other people here. I'll get to you this year, all of you, I promise. But let me remind you of two things. If this is your first time to the podcast, there's a couple of things I'd like you to know. First and foremost, I'm not a financial advisor. What do you think about that? I hold no licenses, no registrations. I basically am a complete and total degenerate. So please don't follow any of my advice. And I don't want to hear, hey, I traded based on what you said. And if it went well or if it went bad, I'm not interested and I don't care. Thank you very much. Good luck to you on your own. That is all. Please don't follow my advice or the advice of my guests. That's your first disclaimer. Secondly, and the most important disclaimer, is there's a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. What does that mean, Chris? Orange juice? No, fuck no, not orange juice. You need to take some type of drink of an alcoholic nature, whether it is a shot, whether it's a glass of wine, whether it's a beer, whether it's something you're making in prison, using the toilet as a fermentation device to make, what do they call that? Like wacky juice or some shit? I forget what they call it in prison. They got some name, hooch, maybe? Just make 2 of those. You put one next to the other. Sometimes you need to take ice and put a mixer with some vodka. Sometimes you need to just take something out of a glass and put it into a smaller glass and then just drink it. That works too. You know, if you don't want to feel like a degenerate, you take, like, if you're just going to drink straight vodka, right? If you take that vodka out of the Grey Goose bottle and then you pour it into like a nice rocks glass and you just drink it right out of there with no ice or anything, you're basically drinking it right out of the bottle. But you can't drink it right out of the bottle because then you look like a total piece of shit. So if you want to drink like a piece of shit, but you don't want to look like a piece of shit, pour it into another glass. It's like the biggest joke you could play on the world. So you're fooling everybody. I'm refined. I'm drinking something neat. They call it neat. You order something neat, that means take it from a big glass, put it into a smaller glass, and I'm going to clang, put it down my throat in about 3.2 seconds. And by the way, I'm classy as fuck because I didn't drink it out of the bottle. Point is, there's many ways to have a drink. Let's get started with the podcast today. On the line with me today, my brother from another mother, the one and only motherfucking Sang. Lucci's in the house. What's up, brother?
QTR, baby. QTR. What's good? What's good? What's going on, Chris?
Nothing. I'm sitting here looking at this picture of you on your Skype name, which looks like it's been a couple years since you updated this picture, man.
Definitely. I look fatter in that picture. That's actually in New York. That's actually the spot in New York. And ironically, like, I'm building another, you know, similar office type setup down here in Puerto Rico. So I guess history does kind of fucking repeat itself.
But this is back from the Tribeca days, right?
Yes, yes. This is back from the Tribeca days.
You were eating good or what?
I was eating good in Tribeca, yeah, but I was a lot more stressed out. I was a lot more stressed out because there was so many more mouths to feed, bro. There was a whole like extravagant lifestyle that I was trying to keep up, and there was the constant need for more. That's what happened in New York. So no matter what I had, I was still kind of secretly fucking miserable.
And you get this like little snapshot of your life there that you take kind of, you know, without thinking it's going to wind up being a time capsule of how you felt and how you look at the time. And I'm looking at this picture of you, man, and you just look fucking miserable, man. You look miserable. And the other thing, too, is I've never seen a picture of you where you didn't have your head completely shaved. And in this one, it looks like you went a couple of days and your hair's starting to grow in a little bit. And yeah, man, you just, I don't know. You don't look like the Sang Lucci I know in this picture.
Indeed, man, indeed. These are the things that we go through. And would you, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, of course you can. It's just everybody that knew me while I was in New York was just, you know, they were all just kind of yes men, yep. Kind of, you know, and it was just kind of attached to you because you were, you know, you were the guy, or, you know, so what in your little ecosystem, you were the guy. So everybody would come over to the crib after work every single day. So, you know, there'd be new people in there every single day. It was cool. Don't get me wrong. It was cool. It was definitely cool. But at the same time, it's like, what are we really doing here?
And you know, yeah, and you know everybody wants something, right? Like, you know, yep. Everybody's not just coming over because they think you're a wonderful person. They like talking to you. You know, like, they knew you were the guy to go to if they needed something, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And then I got overwhelmed because saying no is complicated in the beginning. It's saying no when you're the guy and everybody's kind of looking to you. You know, it's difficult. It takes some getting used to. It takes, like, you know, some personal work basically to get to a place where you're confident in saying no, because at that moment when you're the yes guy, like, you want everybody to be around you. I wanted that. I wanted everybody to be, you know, I wanted everybody to look at me like that. You know what I'm saying? So you want it, so you don't want to say no, and you fear saying no because you're going to lose all this shit. But in reality, what you really want is to fucking say no to every motherfucker that you look at. You know what I mean? That's what you really want, but you know, you're not ready to see that.
And some people get that, like, quicker in life. Some people get it kind of, you know, just through maturity, and maybe they find a little bit of monetary success, so it's easier for them to kind of, you know, they probably think it's being a dick, when really all it is you're just kind of taking sovereignty over your own time. And, you know, if people, I was talking to a guy today who was considering sponsoring the podcast and had some things that I didn't want to do. And I was like, you know what? I don't do that. You know, like, I just, and the more you do that, the more saying no kind of becomes easier. And it's interesting because being the host of a podcast, there's many times where I can tell the discussion is getting long in the tooth and it's probably time for whoever the guest is to wrap up. For instance, if I call Peter Schiff on a Saturday morning and, you know, he's telling me like, oh, I'm doing the podcast and I'm going to breakfast with my wife or something. You know, I have a little clock at an hour, hour and a half. It's like, all right, you know, I kind of got to start wrapping this up, whatever. Because I think Peter and a couple other people, they'd be too nice to kind of say, hey, let's end it or it's over. But you look at the difference between somebody like them and somebody like Jocko, who I just had on, who, you know, 50 minutes into the podcast, we were like, I was about to open up a whole new line of questioning about jiu-jitsu and all this other shit. And he's just like, Chris, well, I gotta go, you know? And I'm like, all right, fucking see ya. And I think that's one of those acquired skills, right?
Indeed, indeed. And you're right. Some people get it earlier. Some people get it a little bit later. Some people have no fear of it whatsoever, and they protect their space and they know what they're doing, you know, super early on. It took me a little bit longer to figure it out, and it was probably a little bit more costlier for me to to figure it out. But that's why you can't – that's why you also can't shit on anybody else. You know what I mean? Right. Like out here, especially in the year – I mean 2019, 2020, like – everybody is too comfortable judging and shitting on the next man because of where they are in life, when in reality, like, you shitting on yourself. You literally shitting on yourself, but you just think you at some other level, and it's so easy for you to talk down to somebody else because they ain't where you at. But in reality, you were there at some point, so how do you have the gall to talk shit about the next man?
Or,
when, you know.
Or you're going to be there. And those are the ones. Those are some of the ones that I really look forward to. You know, where people that are in a position that are higher up than you, or in a position where they have more money or they have more experience or whatever, but for some reason they decide they want to badmouth you. And you know, there's people out there on Twitter that badmouth me, and there's people that badmouth you. And those are the people that I just, you know, I don't respond. I used to. I don't anymore. I just don't care. I sit back and I have this like confidence that, like, well, this person is going to blow themselves up at some point, and yep, you know, they'll be in my position at some point, and still waiting for some of them to happen, and some of them have already happened, and when they do, you know, I don't rub it in. I don't, you know, I just make a little mental note of it, like, okay, interesting. Yep. You know.
Yep.
This is what I knew what was going to happen. So it's, you don't want to be the person that is out there kind of dishing it out. You don't want to punch down. You know,
you really don't
punch up, maybe, but you don't want to punch down.
You really don't, because it'll come back on you, man. It'll come back on you, and I'm learning that slowly, you know, as I get into my late fucking 30s here, 2020, baby, 2020. What the fuck?
When was your
birthday,
Chris?
What are we doing? I'm July 6th.
How old are you?
36.
You're 36. I just turned 37. I'm older than you.
I mean, what is that, surprising, man?
I didn't know that. I thought you were a couple years older than me. I don't know why. You don't look older than me.
I mean, that's all right. That's all relative here. We all age differently. We all look differently. I mean, they have those silly those silly sayings like "black don't crack" you know, what are the other ones, or something about the Chinese or something like that. They don't grow old, or they look the same, or something like that. You know, when they get older.
You're not black, you're brown.
Me, exactly. Indians, like, they, you know, we definitely wear it. We definitely wear the age on our faces and our bodies, man. So as soon as you pass 40, you know, shit is not looking.
You look like Gandhi
together.
Immediately.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? It's like, listen, get this man a motherfucking cheeseburger. Get this man something.
You just start to look like a little Indian raisin, you know, after 40.
Mean?
The clock starts.
Exactly.
Anyway, you look young, man. You look young. You look good, man.
Good looks, bro. Good looks.
So I wanted to do this podcast today. Actually, I didn't intend on talking to you for a little while longer, because we just had that really good podcast like last month that I really enjoyed. And your podcasts are like some of the only ones that I'll go back and listen to again. I don't, for the most part, like the sound of my voice. And I don't really like listening to podcasts after I do them, because I just fucking listen to them. So there's no point in me going back and listening to them again. But yours is one of the few that I'll go back and listen to, because you had some really good stories and I enjoyed it. But a couple weeks after that, I was taking a train to New York City, and I was reading an article about somebody that blew up their account, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody had just blown up their account, and they had written a little something about it. It wasn't Option Sellers. That was a couple months ago, but it was something similar. Some other, you know what it was? It was guys blowing up using that Robinhood trick, right? Where they're insane leverage on Robinhood, and then just, you know.
Cheat codes on Twitter, baby, for free. Cheat right. codes.
Like they're playing Game Boy, right? But I was reading that, and I was like, it brought me back to a couple of years ago, this is probably 5 years ago, and I'm not sure if I told this story, so you have to forgive me if I have. But somebody blew up on, I think it was, what was the Shkreli one that he squeezed? Is that KBIO?
KBIO, yep.
Okay. after that happened, for those of you that don't know the story, KBIO was like essentially a biotech shell. It had a market cap of like whatever, under 5 million, or it was very small, and it had a, you know, very low float and was just kind of not doing operations. Oh, and it was getting ready for bankruptcy. It had collapsed and essentially was an equity stub. So if you don't know what an equity stub is, it's a company that's pretty much a very super volatile call option at that point that's either going to go to zero or is either going to go crazy. And Shkreli saw this. This is before he went to the clink.
Yep.
And decided that he was going to buy up a shitload of the shares. And the thing was, this thing still had some residual equity value. And everybody was assuming that, you know, in a Chapter 7 situation that it was going to go through, the equity would become 100% worthless. But it still had a little equity value to it. So there were these people going in and really picking up pennies in front of bulldozers, trying to short this thing at like 30 cents, hoping it goes to 20 cents, hoping it goes to 10 cents, which if you're a short seller, this is one of the most dangerous things that you can do, right?
Right.
So, and I was watching it in the days prior. I even put out some tweets on it. Like, I can't believe this isn't going lower. And there was somebody else, a somewhat well-known short seller who had messaged me about it at the time. Like, do you know anything about it? I said, no, it's kind of weird that it hasn't fallen the way that people think that it should be falling. So lo and behold, some time goes by and everybody's waiting for them to file for bankruptcy. And Shkreli files a Form 3 out of nowhere after hours one day, which is an initial form of ownership. So when you are first filing as a Form 4 filer, you file a Form 3 first if you hit the you know, the 10% threshold. Or is it 10 or 5?
I think it's 10.
Okay, you hit the 10% threshold or you become an officer or director. When you transact your stock, you have to disclose it. So this Form 3 hits the wire, and this dude comes out and he's like, listen, motherfuckers, I own half this company now, and I'm putting together a deal to finance it as is with the equity, as is, no bankruptcy, whatever. And this thing ran from like 30 cents after hours that day to something like $40 or $50.
40 bucks. Yeah,
what was it?
Yeah, 40 bucks. 40 bucks, somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, over the next couple of days. So, in the aftermath of this giant short squeeze, I remember watching it on the ticker. I was at the office, and it was coming across the CNBC ticker after hours. And every print it was coming across, it was like, you know, 30 cents, 90 cents, $2, you know, $5, $7. Yep. Every print was going by. I was like, holy fuck.
Yep.
And in the aftermath of this, there was a story about a guy who in, you know, some guy in a self-directed E-Trade account who had shorted, you know, 1,000 shares or something.
Yep.
Or, you know, shorted 10,000 shares at 30 cents with the little margin he had in his account and didn't watch it after hours and didn't know what had gone on and woke up the next morning to like $1.5 million call.
Yep.
You know, it'd gone from a $10,000 account in the positive to like being into E-Trade for $1.5 million.
Right.
And the dude had, I think, started a GoFundMe and had started a some type of written an article about it or something. And somehow I wound up linked up with this guy through email.
Yep.
And I remember I called him. I actually think he was in Boston, I want to say. But I called him a couple of days later and he was beside himself. And I was like, hey, you know, just so you know, worst comes to worst. I mean, you get a file for personal bankruptcy. You know, it's not the end of the world. And the guy was just, he was beside himself because when you log into an account and you see $1.5 million call, it's just like, oh man, like it's beyond, I mean, that's beyond blowing up your account. That's swinging the gate in the other direction to the tune of $1.5 million.
Yep.
We had this nice conversation for like 20 or 30 minutes where, you know, I explained to him, hey, you know, this has happened to everybody. Like, everybody's fucked up and made mistakes like this. Like, there will be an answer, and at some point, things will get better. And then I think I heard from him some months later. He sent me a note or something, just said, thanks, you know, for the call at the time. It meant a lot, and, you know, things are better now. And I don't know what happened resolution-wise, but it reminded me of that story when I read about these people blowing up. And I thought about all the times that I had blown my own account up. And I thought that it would be cool to make a podcast talking about those things and kind of trying to lay out what we've learned from them
and why blowing up your account is not the end of the world. Because when it happens, it's the worst fucking feeling in the world. And it doesn't matter if it's $100 or it's $5,000 or it's $50,000 or it's $500,000. When you blow up your account, it's the worst feeling in the world because you're essentially back at square zero. You know, you have no money to even try to make trades with, and you've likely just blown a lot of money, more than you probably could afford to blow. And you were the first person I thought of. So I remember calling you when I got out of the train station a couple weeks ago, and I was like, dude, we got to do this podcast talking about what has happened when you've blown up your accounts. What does it feel like? You know, what can we tell people that are going through the same thing to kind of remind them that, you know, this isn't the end. It's just the beginning. Every time you had blown up or I'd blown up, I always thought, hey, this is it. I'm fucked, you know, like whatever. And yet here we are, you know, ostensibly doing better than we've ever done. So it's unfortunate that it happens. If you can avoid it altogether, that's the ideal situation, right? But yeah. I'm interested in like a couple of your stories, maybe like how you've blown up, like what did you learn from it? And how did you recover? And what are you doing differently now that prevents you from blowing up? Those are the things I want to touch on, man.
No doubt. And I think it's great. I think it's great, by the way, that you're doing this. I think this is the perfect venue, the QTR podcast. I think you're the perfect person to put this out there. I've done this on my own, just doing the Lucci meets and really getting out there and just meeting some of these other traders and hearing some of their stories. And bro, I mean, it's kind of sad how much we don't talk about this stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's really sad how this particular community, of all the others out there, we really don't want to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about this shit. And it's one of the most important things to talk about. And you have to. You literally have to if you want to move forward. And if you really want to, you know, kind of stop that self-loathing kind of thing that we usually do when we hit the skids like that, you know what I mean? So I think it's great. I think it's great, number one, that you're doing this. Ironically, I literally had a kid that moved to Puerto Rico, 24-year-old kid. He's from LA, moved to Puerto Rico, you know, to sign up under that Act 20, Act 22 to not pay the capital gains. And the first couple of months that he was down here, he took these fucking monster losses. And it was, I believe it was on shorting Tesla a little bit too early through some options or something like that. And he burned 90% of his account. And I don't know this kid, Chris. I don't know this kid at all. He hits me up on a DM. You know what I'm saying? He hits me up on a DM on Instagram. And it's like, yo, are you down here? You know, something. And I could feel something was wrong, man. He didn't really say much, but I can feel something was wrong. And he was like, yo, let me come by the office. I was busy doing my own shit. And I was like, God, now I got to – I didn't want to talk to him. But I could sense like something was going on, man. So I told him, I was like, yeah, all right. I'll be here for another 30 minutes. You know, come through. And here comes this 24-year-old kid who thought he had it all figured out in LA. I guess he had a crazy lifestyle out in LA, but he was just getting tired of it. So he's like, all right, I'm gonna come to Puerto Rico, work on my trading. He dumps 90%. This kid was literally contemplating on suicide, bro. You know what I'm saying? This kid was legit contemplating suicide, man. You know, and I get it. I looked at him. I was like, I get it. I understand where you are. But you got to and it took me to you know, really kind of just get him to realize like, yo, you still got a chip in a chair. You're fucking 24. You got all this shit here.
Right.
You're doing all the right things. You just got to calm the fuck. This was literally a week before New Year's, man. This was literally like right before Christmas.
This is after I called you or no?
This was after you called me.
So that is an interesting coincidence, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This was right after you called me. And again, like, I've kind of put out this world or this vibe that people will come to me with these kind of stories because they feel like they ain't got nobody else to talk to. So I'm the first, but even though they don't even know me, man, they'll just hit me up on the DM and they'll be like, yo, man, I got crushed, man. My account's done. Da 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 da. And I'll get these DMs all the time. So I know, and you know, Chris, that this shit is happening way more than the person who is you know, got a consistent strategy.
Oh, yeah.
And da, 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 all this kind of stuff. And we kind of I feel these kind of things through my chat room, through the Slack group that I created, through these meetups that I do. And it's crazy, man. But just that conversation alone, literally the day after, you know, he hits me up. He was like, yo, man, thank you so much. So I think it's necessary that we do this, man. So I appreciate you, man, for wanting to do this. This is going to be a great, like, piece to the podcast for 2020. All right, so my loss, man, my loss. Let's do the one. Let's do the one in New York first, because it's not always the one trade that you blow up on. Sometimes, and most often, bro, it's the slow bleed.
Right, yep.
You know what I'm saying? It's the slow bleed that you know, that lasts for like 6 months or like a year that just takes you out, and you're just preventing the inevitable. And it's almost like you've already decided to blow out in your head. You just can't reverse the fucking course because you're already miserable, and that's the energy that you're kind of sending out there in the world. So I had this month where I literally made $1 million, and then the month after that, I lost $1 million. I lost $1 million that I made, and I was kind of like in this Twitter battle world, you know, with this guy, with this numbers guy, this numerology guy. Have you ever heard of this shit, this numerology shit?
Yeah, it's yes, I heard of okay. it. I avoid it.
100%. So I get in a fight with this guy on Twitter, right? And he's like, I don't know what happened, but I was just like, dude, and me in New York, I mean, I was an asshole. I had no filter whatsoever. So, you know, I'm calling out motherfuckers left and right on Twitter, like, yeah, you suck, you a piece of shit, and all that kind of stuff, right? I'm just being an asshole. And this guy was like, yo, I'm going to call your demise, right? And he did this numerology shit on me, and he was just like, that's it. You know, the end is nigh for you. You know, that's basically what he was saying. So I go on this run, right? I make $1 million. And I was so frustrated already at that point because out of the million, right, my take is only 20%, right? And I'm in New York, and I got to pay these crazy-ass taxes. So the year before, you know, the fund had made maybe $2 to $3 million, but I only cashed out maybe $400 after all is said and done. And when you're living in New York, yeah, on paper, you know, you made all this money and everything. But in reality, you didn't come home with that much. That's a big thing for traders perception-wise, you know, to deal with, especially if they're not really paying attention to, number one, how they're living, and then number two, the tax bill at the end of the fucking year, right? Because what trader is sitting there, makes $100,000, what trader is going to pocket $20,000 and put it aside to pay for fucking taxes? There's very few traders who do this, and it's those traders that have the consistency that, you know, most folks are looking for. But anyway, so I go on a run, right? I make like $1 million. It was like April. And then the next month, I literally lost $1 million chasing after just some – and I'm just trading weekly options like crazy. So I literally lost $1 million, and then after that, we lost our biggest investor, right? So our biggest investor just pulls out, is just like, yo, I can't handle this fucking volatility. This shit is crazy, because even when you make that money on paper for an investor, if they don't pull out their cash – they still got to pay the taxes on it. Right. You know what I mean? So they still got to pay the taxes on it. And then next year, let's say you take a drawdown, they already paid taxes on the gains, and now you got a fat ass drawdown. So they really never got to taste that money anyway.
Right.
But
right.
on paper, you know, they thought they were, you know, $1 million richer, $2 million richer, whatever the hell it was. So this whole game was just perception. It was like, on paper, yeah, I'm the fucking man, but after it's all said and done, what's this shit really looking like? So our biggest investor pulls out, and now I'm left with an account that I'm not used to, or I didn't want to accept, basically, trading. I'm left with an account that's, you know, less than seven figures, basically, and I'm used to throwing around freaking size, and I just couldn't step away from that. So literally every day, bro, it was like a $20,000 loss, $30,000 loss, $20,000 loss, $30,000 loss. And I would go to my living room and just play this one video game, bro. It was Stardust. It was basically that video game that comes preloaded on PlayStation, where you're just shooting. It's like one of those StarCraft, or not StarCraft, but it's like one of those shoot 'em up games where you have a spaceship and you're just out there shooting aliens and shit. That's what it is. So I would literally lose $20,000, go play that game for the rest of the day and just be fucking miserable, bro. And I would I literally just kind of shut down because I knew I just didn't have it in me anymore to you know, make those kind of swings and everything. And what we had created at the office was too much for me to bear, right? We had 20 employees, 30 employees.
Right.
We had all this. I had so many more mouths to feed. And I was just like, yo, this, I can't handle this shit, man. I can't handle this shit. And I came to the market every single day looking to blow out a trade to get back to a place where I was comfortable. And I was like, okay, you know, now we got a nice little chunk of change to play with.
Right.
And every day, bro, I kept losing. I kept losing 10 grand, 20 grand, 10 grand, 20 grand. And then we just kept losing investors. We kept losing investors, of course. And it was difficult for my boys to go to the investors and be like, hey, this kid just literally imploded. Like, what are you going to say to your investors at that point? You know what I mean? And they did their best, of course. Investors kept leaving. And, you know, we got to the point where I literally just had maybe a couple hundred thousand left to fucking trade with. And shit was closing down at Sanglucci because we couldn't afford, you know, half the payroll that we had. So we had to slowly starting telling people like, hey, man, hey, we can't really pay you. We'll give you a little IOU or whatever. And then you start scrambling, man. You know what the scramble is after you know you're about to die, but you're just in a scramble to stay alive, right? So sometimes you might even take out loans. We took out short-term loans, bro. You know those cabbage companies, the ones that give you the short-term 3-month loans and they just immediately come out of your account? I don't know if you know any of those loans, but they're crazy shark ass type loans.
Okay.
For short term, you know, capital, basically.
Sure, sure.
And at a stupid high interest rate, we kind of took out some loans here just to pay people. And at some point, I wasn't even paying myself. We had to just pay everybody else. And that was it. That was it. We had to close. We literally had to just slowly accept the fact that all this shit was going to go bust. The apartment, you know, the crazy apartment that we had to dump it. And I knew, we all agreed, like, yo, this shit is over, man. You guys, you know, my other boys who were running the companies with me were like, okay, we're gonna move to a spot in Brooklyn. And I was just like, yo, I'm going home, man. I'm going home to my fucking parents' house, man. I'm going home. I'm done, you know. So even after I got home, though, the shit wasn't done, man. Shit wasn't done. We still had employees. We still were taking out loans. We were still in crazy debt. And, dude, it was bad, bro. It was bad. I'm back in my parents' house just pissed at myself. But more so, I'm pissed at everybody else. I'm at that point where I don't even want to accept what happened. I'm fucking blaming everybody else, right? I'm blaming girls I used to date, bro. I'm blaming my business partners for bad decisions I thought they made. I'm blaming freaking employees. I'm blaming everybody, dude. I'm literally just throwing the blame at everybody else instead of myself. And I just kind of just fell deeper into a pit of fucking depression and just, bro, I was eating probably a steak and cheese every day, bro. I probably gained like 30, 40 pounds, man. My father was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? Get the fuck out this house. It was bad, bro. It was fucking bad, bro.
How did you start to get back into it after that?
Honestly, and again, this is QTR podcast, baby. We got to shed it all out here. It was a girl, bro. It was a girl. It was literally a girl. I met a girl, and I was just like, yo, how am I going to provide for this girl if I'm sitting here in my parents' house with a motherfucking meatball stain on my damn shirt? And I ain't even got a car. I don't even have a car. You know what I'm saying? And I'm $200,000, you know, $300,000 in debt. How the hell am I going to provide for this girl?
Right.
And then I started to take a hard look at everything that happened. I started to take a hard look at all the businesses I had. And it was just like, all right, this is how we're going to do it going forward. Everybody needs to get shaved. Everybody needs to disappear. And this has got to go back to the basics. Everything's got to go back to the fucking basics. We're going to start from scratch. I actually was even polishing up my damn resume, Chris, to go back to freaking work, bro. I was literally at that point where I was going to do it. And then all of a sudden, one of my boys reached out to me to help me out with his business. And I was able to leverage that relationship into some capital for a trading account. And this was, you know, and this was 2017, 2016. And I had literally been – I was literally hitting up all my prop friends, all my prop trader buddies from back in the day. Like, yo, give me a line, man. Give me a line, man. Just like a fucking crack addict, man. Like, yo, just give me – let me get $5,000 to play with. Let me get $10,000 to play with. Let me get a little bit to play with. And every single time I did that, Chris, guess what happened, man? You already know what happened. You already know what happened, bro. I blew that up, you know? So if somebody gave me – if somebody gave me $5,000 or $10,000 – I'm used to trading a damn $1 million account. I'm going for the blowout every single time, right? So you get a $10,000 account. I'm trying to flip. I'm trying to get to 20. I'm trying to get to 30 so I can get back and take care of all my problems. I fucked up every single one of those relationships too.
Well,
so that
and when you're chasing like that, it's just, you know, it's a strange feeling because you know what you're doing isn't the right thing. You know you shouldn't be acting the way that you're acting, but it's a very, very difficult mindset to snap yourself out of when you're chasing, because you keep telling yourself like, oh, I'm gonna square it. What is he saying? Rounders at one point, like he goes to see Knish and I think he needs like 15 dimes. Yep. And he says, oh, you know, maybe I can do 2 for you or something. And he's like, 2. He's like, I'll just turn around and blow it. You know, like he doesn't even take the 2,000 from him because he knows he's just going to do exactly what you're talking about, which is going to try to turn 2 into 15 overnight, which is an automatic losing proposition.
Exactly. So that's what I was going through. And then all of a sudden, you know, I really started working with this other company, helping them scale up automation wise and all this kind of stuff. And I was able to make a good $50,000-$100,000 doing that. And then I was able to kind of put it back towards trading. But instead, you know, I kind of had a different mindset. I had a different mindset completely. I had came to the realizations that I needed to come to, which simply was like I fucked myself up. You know, I destroyed that whole opportunity I had in New York and so many more. And it was that kind of realization that made me come back to the game like, OK, yeah, OK, you got a little bit of change here. But let's not be, you know, let's not sit here and try to make it all back in one trade. And slowly, 100,000 became 200,000, maybe in 6 months. And I started to get my confidence back too. My confidence really started to come back too. And I realized like, yo, every bad trade I've ever made in my life has literally been because of, you know, I wanted, let's say, too much, or, you know, I wanted to go for the $1 million. Like, yo, I had trades in New York where I was up $700,000, Chris, and I never took them because I wanted $1 million. I wanted to look at the screen. I wanted to look at the motherfucking screen and see the two commas on there. You know what I mean? That's what I want. And I wouldn't sell the shit. You know, how are you going to be up $700,000? You're not going to sell it. And then you end up taking it for a loss. Like, that is some Herb shit. That is some Herb shit. But at the moment in time, your ego is telling yourself, your ego, your everything is telling you like, yo, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Because you're just attached to the idea of it. And then, you know, later on in life, you just realize how stupid it is to do these things.
Yep.
And I think mentally and my whole body, like all the cells in my freaking body just kind of clicked in this different place. It was just like, dude, we don't have to do that. We literally don't have to do that. We don't have to put ourselves in that situation. We can literally say no to so many people and so many trades. So me learning how to just say no to tons of different shit, you know, in business, in life, and in trading, it just kind of brought me to a place where it was like, all right, I'm not stressing this shit out as much. And then all of a sudden in October 2018, when we really took a dive, you know, I made $1 million back, and I had already moved to Puerto Rico at the time, and, you know, and I didn't have to pay no damn capital gains on it. And I was living a life that was much more affordable, living a life off of maybe $4,000 a month, $5,000 a month, nothing crazy, you know, just one apartment. And it was, you know, it's just me. There's no debt I had over my head. I slowly was able to pay all that shit back. And now I'm here, bro. Now I'm here
It's a huge deal, man. Bringing that monthly nut down is the first fucking key, right? So 100%. you can be comfortable and you can live like a fucking baller. You really can for like $4,000 or $5,000 a month. Like, you don't need, you know, it's crazy, man. When I watch like people that are rich. I watch rap stars and fucking sports players, and they all got a crew, and they got three houses and five boats and all this shit. It's just like thinking, like, man, the nuts got to be like $200,000 a month or $250,000 a month for these guys. Nobody needs to do that, man. Even if you're worth $1 billion, you can live like a baller for $5,000, $10,000 a month. And that's straight it, up. You know, like all the other shit that you might think you want to acquire in life, whether it's a super yacht, whether it's fucking, you know, a house in Greece, whatever. You can rent all those things, right?
Man, exactly.
Go rent a boat for fucking $10,000 for a week. You know what I mean? Exactly. You pay it once, it's over and done with. You don't have to worry about emptying the fucking toilet on the boat. You don't have to worry about docking it. You don't have, you know, you rent a house in Greece. You don't got to worry about the fucking Greek economy for the rest of your life when the, you know, Greek building inspectors come around. I mean, there's smart ways to do things. And keeping that monthly nut as low as possible, that is... that's crucial, man, because that allows you to kind of sock a lot of the capital away that you make, which, frankly, you know, when you blow up, it becomes a time to play fucking serious defense, right? You take a hard look at every single thing on a monthly basis that you're shelling out for, and you got to play defense. And if that defense is you put $100 a month away, that's it. You know, if that defense is you got to start paying down whatever your business loans were, an extra $1,000 a month. I mean, you got to go full on like Austrian, right? You got to go full on Austrian economist. You got to save money. You got to fucking spend less than you earn. And you got to start to rebuild a little bit of a war chest and a little bit of a foundation for yourself. And it's totally possible. It's, you know, for anybody that's got 25% of a brain, it's totally possible. If me and you lost everything today and we went back to zero and we had no debt and no liabilities and no assets and had to start over, we could definitely do it. We'd fucking get two jobs, we would hustle, and we would sock it away until, you know, $100 became $1,000, until $1,000 became 10, and then you try to make a couple of moves and 10 becomes 50, and then all of a sudden now you got a little bit of something to sit on. So then you got some security. Like, and it can be done. And it can be done in a much shorter period of time than people think, as long as you have discipline about it, you know. And I think back to some of the times where, like, I did blow up, and, you know, first and foremost, just to go back to one of the things that you said about, you know, you had 700,000 on paper, but you wanted to make it a million. That is something that happens to everybody, man. If you're sitting on a fucking Robinhood account right now with $10 in it, right? Somebody sent me a screenshot today. They had one share of a $7 stock. I was like, all right, you know, if you're sitting on an account that's got fucking $7 in it, you're looking for 100. That's your fucking goal, right? When you get to 100, you're looking for 1,000. You know, you say, oh man, if I had 1,000, I would be chilling right now. You get to 1,000, you say, man, if I got to 10,000, I would be fucking chilling with 10. And when you get to 10, you want to see that six figures. And then you want to see that second comma, right? And you lose sight of, you know, this is one of those things where the more money you save, you start to lose sight of exactly how much you have. And if you trade relative to, you know, I'm not going to trade $100 right now the same way I'm going to trade $10,000, you know, because if you gave me $100 and said trade this, I'd be like, well, our only option is to go into short weekly options and hope that we can, you know, just do something quick. You know, I'm not going to buy $100 in equity in something because unless it's a special situation, I'm not really going to have time to make a meaningful return. I mean, percentage-wise, I might. But on an absolute dollar amount, I might not. And as your stack grows, you have to start to realize that, you know, you can't keep those same percentages. You know, if you have $100, I would bet 100% of my total capital that in weekly options. If you have $10,000, I wouldn't bet 100% of my total capital in weekly options because that would be $10,000 worth of weekly options. I'd probably still bet that same $100, which at that point is, you know, 1% of your capital. And at 100,000, it becomes a 1/10% of your capital. But like what you're talking about reminded me of a lot of times where, you know, you see your bankroll growing, you think you have to make trades that are relative to how big your bankroll is getting. Uh-huh. So when I take a lottery ticket now on something on a Friday, right, I'm only taking a fucking $200 lottery ticket sometimes, man, even though my account's gotten much bigger, right? And it's not big. I'm not where you are, but I still take that small lottery ticket at $100 because if I do that relative to what my account is now, it'll be fucking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Fridays go by and all of a sudden I'm going to be down 40%. You know what I mean? So it's important to remember that when your account starts to get bigger, you know, just you forget, man. It's like when you go to Vegas, right? And you fucking take $100 and you put it on the craps table and you're playing $5 chips, right? And you hit a 30 to 1, right? You hit box cars on a single bet roll and they hand you $145, which is your 30 to 1 minus the $5 that stays on the table. You get that $145 in green chips, and now you just got, well, you got some red chips and some green chips, but they're all still chips, right? So maybe you're feeling good on the next one, so you throw out a green chip, not realizing that that's the same as throwing out five of those red chips that you were fucking with just 5 minutes ago. And this is, of course, as many people know, why Vegas uses chips instead of using money, you know? Because if you sit down and you actually had to throw $25 on the table, you'd be like, fuck, well, that's dinner and a drink. You know, they use chips for the purpose of trying to make you forget of how much money you're throwing down. So the guy that's playing, you know, the Asian cat that's playing Baccarat for fucking $5,000 a hand, and he's using $5,000 chips. And if that dude was sitting there with five stacks and had to push fucking five stacks in every single time he wanted to make a bet, he might look at that different as, you know, those little chips that are the same size, Lucci, as the other chips. They're just a different color, and they just say 5,000 on them instead of five.
Yep.
Right? So that's why Vegas does that. And there's an element of that when you're trading that you have to remember. And, you know, as your account grows larger, one of the struggles for me and one of the things that I've finally, you know, knock on wood, learned over the years is when you start to take a loss, you know, sometimes you can't go back in, man. Sometimes you just got to take your loss. And every chart that you look at of anybody's account who's done well, there's always these peaks and valleys. Maybe the trend's upwards, but there's peaks and valleys. So you got to remember, like, what did this guy do when he lost fucking 1.5% in a day on his way up to make these extremely good gains? He didn't turn around and start overtrading and fucking blow it out. He said, all right, today's that day that I take that 1.5% and tomorrow's another day.
Exactly. And the loss that you're usually taking on a generally consistent P&L, guess what? It's always centered around a couple of things. Number one, it's centered around the fact that maybe your strategy, it just doesn't work right now. There's just a change in the market where something is a little bit different. And if you keep trying to hammer that same shit, chances are you're going to get yourself into a difficult position, and you're going to keep throwing more at it to try to get out of it, because that's been your experience up to, you know, that particular date. But then all of a sudden that trade just doesn't work anymore, and it's going to get broken. So that's number one. Or number two is that you're just not in a good headspace right now. There might be shit going on in your life that you just can't – you bring to the market. So, you know, maybe you're going through a damn divorce, or maybe you're going through a breakup. Maybe one of your businesses is going to shit. You know, who knows what it is. Maybe you're just going through one of those tough periods where, you know, you don't have control over yourself and your decisions. And, you know, that's the other reason that you take those losses. So it's weird how – it, you know, these losses force us to be in a situation where we can actually, you know, objectively take a look at these things that are happening in our lives and be like, oh, okay, that's why. Now, the problem is that most people don't pay attention to these things, or most people don't give enough weight, you know, to their type of thinking. And usually your instinct will tell you, like, hey, motherfucker, you lean off the keys a little bit, man. All you got to do is just lean off these keys a little bit. If you keep going, you know what's going to happen. And you're just set. Your mind is already set. It doesn't matter what your instinct and what your gut tells you. Your mind is just going to go where it fucking goes. And it's literally just going to ask to get smacked in the fucking face, man. That's just the natural occurrence of these things. So yeah, man. I mean, to go back to your point about cutting down your lifestyle, like, yo, Sang Lucci had a $50,000 spend in New York. That was our motherfucking burn rate, bro. Every single month we had a $50,000 spend, and we were spending on marketing, we were spending on development, we were spending on all kinds of shit, and employees as well. And not only that, Sanglucci had a $50,000 spend. My personal spend, bro, was $30,000 a month. That was what my spend was, you know, at that moment in time. You know what I'm saying? And that shit was ridiculous. There was no way that we could sustain that level of growth unless I kept making, you know, several million dollars a freaking year.
Right.
And it was just too much pressure. I think I was thinking about the money way too much. And I had to work that out of my system again and again and again until finally I'm at this much better place mentally now, where I come to the market, I see what's going on, and I'm like, you know, I'm there if it feeds me, and if it doesn't, like, I really don't give a shit because I'm fine. I'm not spending ridiculous money every single month. I don't need to make money every single day. And it's finally the acceptance of those things that has helped me really make, number one, make the money I want to make, and then the most importantly, just fucking keep it. Just keep it. You know what I'm saying? And not put myself in that situation anymore. And I can't say I'll never do it again. I can't say I'll never be in that position where I lose everything. I don't think any of us can say that, depending on how we live, depending on what we want to do in the future and all that kind of stuff. But I think my relationship to money has changed completely. Like, I don't have attachment to it like I was before, because right. I'm not attached to the things that I'm buying, you know. So when I was in New York, I was attached to the personality, I was attached to what I had, I was attached to all that shit. Now, like, yo, I'm good with my Camry, I'm good with my fucking dope condo here in PR that I paid what, literally two and a quarter for, and my mortgage is shit. I got a great pool. I got a great pool here. I live 2 minutes away from the fucking beach. Like, I'm good, man. I don't need any of this shit. I eat good. I'm all right, man. You know what I mean? So if I make another 50 or lose another 50 or I make another mil, it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter. But it took all of that shit to get to this place. And, bro, I was in – Sanglucci was in $200,000 in debt. I was in $200,000 of personal debt as well. So when you think about that and what you were saying, like how quickly it compounds, once I made a decision to look at the debt, to literally take a look at each one of the debt holders and be like, okay, this is what I can do for you, and actively calling them, finally actively – facing my situation instead of fucking running from it and making it worse,
right.
Facing the situation and saying, okay, you know, I can kick $1,000 of this. I can kick $1,000 of this. I can kick a couple hundred of this. And then all of a sudden, within the span of a year, some better trading because my mind was clearer. You know, I was out of debt and back up seven fucking figures, man. You know what I mean? And it happened so quickly. So again, just to reinforce Chris's point to everybody out there, anybody out here who is in this current position right now or finds themselves in this position, the sooner you accept what has happened, the sooner you literally realize the mistakes, the sooner you can just work slowly on making it back. But I understand you got to go through a period where you're just pissed off, man. And it's different for everybody. Some people are going to go through years of depression and they might never come out of it, man. You might never hear from these motherfuckers again. You really might not. You know, and then other people are just, you know, they're quick to come back out of that hole. So it really depends on your personality, but it's fucking possible, man. It's fucking possible.
Possible. And one of the other good points is that it's not the end of the world. It feels like the end of the world. It fucking blows. It's the worst feeling ever. It really is. And I've made a point over the last like decade where, you know, every time I felt at a point where I had screwed things up beyond repair, or, you know, not even just with trading, but with life in general, when I make a mistake or something that I'm really ashamed of, that I make note of it. I just note the date and I kind of make a personal note as to how I'm feeling. And I revisit those things and I go back to them. And I remember the last time I did it was, you know, years ago. But the last time I did it, I remember thinking about the time I had done it prior and saying to myself, like, didn't think I'd be fucking doing this again. You know what I mean? Like, but here I was back at fucking a spot where I was like, really felt like a piece of shit. And I can't even remember if it was trading related or what it was at the time, but I felt like shit. And, you know, I've just kind of done those things because I do them in anticipation of there being a day where I can look back on them and be like, oh, all right, like, it wasn't that bad. And every single time I've looked back on those things where I really thought everything was fucked, and it isn't, you know? And I think that's a really important thing. If you've blown up and you're at zero, or you've blown up or you're and you put yourself in debt to trade, which is never a good idea, obviously. But if you've done it, it happens. And you blew that, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's, you may have to look, I mean, look at that guy fucking super trades on Twitter. I don't follow a lot of his shit or whatever, but he's done very well for himself. I mean, that dude filed for bankruptcy. He talks about it all the time. He's like, man, I just fucking, you know, darkest days of my life, 2015, 2016. I don't know what he did. Probably some shit like we're talking about, you know, took an L that he couldn't come back from, fucking smashed up his account, fucked his life up. And you know, he's bounced back. And you can go back in history and read the stories of many famous people and many celebrities that, you know, like Sam Walton, I don't think made his money till he was in his 50s or something ridiculous. Yep. And I know there's that stupid Abraham Lincoln quote, like, hey, he ran for president, you know, 15 times, and on the 16th time he won. I don't know what it is. But history is littered with people that have just gotten their fucking balls punched in and over and over again. And it's finally that, you know, that next fucking iteration where they break through. And it's that next iteration where, you know, they learn the lesson that they need to learn to prevent what's happened from happening again. Or they learn the lesson that they need to learn in order to find some prosperity and find some success. One of the things I just want to go back to that we were talking about, because this is one that resonates with me personally. Like, I have often obsessed about, you know, getting to a certain number, getting to a certain point. Oh, when I get to X amount is when I'm going to fucking pump the brakes, and when I'm finally going to, you know, take some time off from trading and whatever. You know, when I get here, when I get to this number. And I remember, like, 4 or 5 years ago, that number was very different than it is for me now. Right? Like, there's still a goal that I aspire to, but you can't let that, because I think that's something that people fixate on. You can't let that get in the way of what you're talking about, which is sometimes less is more. And it can be very tough to break out of, especially if you're a gambler by nature, especially if you, you know, if you like the rush of fucking trading, you know, if you're just a down and dirty degenerate, it can, like any fucking addiction, you know, it can be exceptionally difficult. But you got to realize that if you're in a spot now where, like, hey, you haven't blown up, or, you know, maybe you're down 10% this year, or, you know, you've got a little bit of money, you're doing all right. If you can make, you know, if you can make ends meet and you can make the bills and you can get up every day and, you know, you got two arms and two legs and, you know, a bed to sleep in and a roof over your head, you're already ahead of the game and probably ahead of fucking like 60% of the world right now, right?
100%.
So from there, you just got to remind yourself that, look, the market's going to open every day, man. You know what I mean? The market's not going anywhere. You don't have to crush it today. You don't have to crush it tomorrow. You don't have to crush it this week or this month or this year. You just got to stay afloat. You know, you just got to protect yourself. It's like same way when you're playing hold'em. You know, you don't got to play every hand. Man, you got to play the fucking 2-7 off suit just to make a point that you can play a 2-7 off suit. You know, wait, play tight. Wait for the fucking, what does he say? The wired nines are higher, right? You can do that. But it gets so difficult sometimes when you're fixated on a number, or you're fixated on, you know, I got to get to here, I got to get to there. And I got to tell you, man, some of the best trades I've had of recent and some of the best days that I've had of recent. For instance, I was just in Montreal for the last 4 or 5 days, right? And just up there, like, chilling out for New Year's Eve, had a nice little vacation. And when I'm up in Montreal, I don't have my setup. Like, here I have my setup where I got all my charts and everything. So I can sit down and literally I can take it tick by tick. You know, even right now, I got the futures cranking away right now, right? Or no, something's trading after hours. Futures aren't open yet, but something's printing right now. I can see some blinking on the side of my monitor. And, you know, the vibe here when I'm at the house is, you know, I'm at the desk at 6 a.m. and that's it. And then I'm at the desk for majority of the day. I'll go out, I'll get some lunch, I'll get a coffee, come back, and I'm at the desk, and I'm doing work too, you know, aside from trading. But I got the shit right here. And while I was in Montreal, you know, I was working also, but I would take the laptop to a coffee shop, and there's not enough room on a little ThinkPad screen to have the fucking everything all the time going on. So I was taking these walks, like, during the day at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock when the market was open, just closing that thing up and thinking, man, all these charts and all these blinking lights are all happening somewhere. But for right now, like, what do I see? Well, I see St. Catherine Street and a bunch of people out going shopping and this beautiful city, you know what I mean, that I'm walking around in.
Yep.
And it helped me kind of put all those things. Yeah, I would go down to the phone maybe like every 30 minutes, 45 minutes and make sure stuff wasn't completely haywire. And even when I was just working at the, you know, because I was working pretty much normal days when I was up there, I didn't have the fucking quotes up in the background.
Right.
So you got to remember that it's possible to be a trader and to be an investor and not fucking hover over your shit and micromanage it all the time. Even if you're trading weekly options, at the end of the week, you want to go through your shit, make sure nothing's going to exercise or go crazy. But you don't need to be there every second of every day. And oftentimes I've found doing that does me a lot more harm than good, man. I'm closing out fucking profitable trades before I let them run. Or I'm fucking, you know, making trades I shouldn't be making. There's something to be said about remembering that you don't have to be on the ready, on the guard all the time at the screen. Because A, it can be detrimental to your trading. But B, man, you miss the fuck out on life too. You know what I mean? Like, you miss out on life. I was doing some writing last week, right? In just in a Word document, and I was sitting at this place called Cafe Hawaii in Montreal, which is this cool little cafe near the Guy Concordia metro stop, and they make all these like fucking awesome crepes and like you know, fruit smoothies and everything. It's just banging. I was eating this banging Nutella crepe breakfast that was just incredible.
Little crepe thing, yep. Yep.
And I'm sitting there, and I was there for like 4 hours working on this Word document, and I never even pulled up the quotes or anything once. And I'm just sitting there like, man, look at the snow outside, man. I can breathe, you know? Like, I got some money. Maybe I'm down 1%. Maybe I'm up 1% right now. Nothing's going haywire. You know? Just fucking breathe and enjoy life. And you got to remember, man, you know, the number you think you need to be at in order to take a deep breath and enjoy yourself is much lower than what you think it is. You know,
it's much lower. It's much fucking lower, man. It's much fucking lower. But it's like, and again, like we don't want to sound preachy. Like, I know Chris is not a preachy type of guy. I'm not a preachy type of dude. We just telling y'all what we've been through ourselves, and then what we kind of figured out along the way, you know. And it's like most traders who start out, you know, they'll hear a podcast like this, and you know what they'll think, bro? Because of the ego and because of the mentality, and this is the mentality that I had when I started. I didn't give a fuck what anybody said. Right. I didn't give a shit what anybody said, bro. I didn't give a fuck, man.
Or you think they got so much money that it doesn't matter and it's easy for them to say, and that's not the case.
You find a way. You find a way to feed your ego. You find a way to convince yourself that you're going to change the game, that you're going to do this shit differently than all these motherfuckers who you think sound preachy or who you think sound whatever. And, you know, so we can't sit here and tell you, you know, we can't sit here and tell you, listen, you'd be better off doing this shit. The fact of the matter is, you have to figure this out by yourself. But we just want to convey to you guys that the shit ain't over. The shit is not over when it hits the fan. And it will hit the fan for you. It will hit the fucking fan.
For everybody, yep.
It will hit the fan. It doesn't matter what level you get to. Shit is going to hit the fan, whether it's in your life or whether it's in trading or whatever. And the more you can kind of be cognizant of that, the better you can make decisions today to plan for that. And it's a difficult thing to want to do because the youth, you know, it's a young man's game. This shit is a young man's game, man. The youth will always look at this and be like, nah, man, fuck that. I want this shit now. I'm gonna make it work how I want to make it work. And yo, ego will take you to places that are very far and they're very dark at the same time. So, you know, we can't sit here and prevent you from going through these things. We're just sitting here telling you, like, listen, it's going to happen to you, whether you like it or not. Like, the shit is going to happen to you. And if you can start changing the way you think about these things, or even accepting the fact that it will happen to you, maybe you can start making some better decisions now, you know, that can be a little bit more preventative than when you're in the heat of the moment and your emotions are fucking flying and you're up 700 grand, but you're addicted to the fact that you want to tell the world that you just made $1 million on one fucking trade. You know, this, and there's all kinds of levels. People want to make $50 million in one trade. People want to make $100 million in one trade. There's all kinds of egos, all kinds of levels out there. And yo, these emotions and these types of attachments, they can be very detrimental to yourself, your life, your trading account, you know, and all this kind of shit. But you know, that's kind of what we want to throw out there. But that addiction to the number, like, yo, I thought so many times, Chris, that like if I hit this number, my life is gonna be good. I'm gonna be set. I ain't gonna have to worry about shit. And every time I hit that motherfucking number, Chris, it never felt like that.
Right.
It never felt like that. All it was a rollover. It was just a rollover to the next number.
Right.
And I felt the exact same way I did before I was able to hit any, you know, a previous number. So let's say if you're shooting for 2 mil or 3 mil, while you're trying to get there, everything in your life is miserable. Everything is pointing towards this fucking number. If I don't hit this number, I'm a piece of shit. And if I, you know, if I get to this number, I'm great. Then you get to that number and it's like it hits you like a bag of fucking rocks. It's like, whoa, I don't feel anything. Now I want 6 million. Now I want 10 million. And the misery just starts over. It just rolls over to the next number. And there's a life outside of that, what Chris is talking about right now, that's much easier on the mind, that's much easier on your life. It allows you to enjoy yourself a little bit. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to just be miserable trying to attack this fucking goal and just making that goal the sole sum of your existence. Like, you are worth so much more than trying to make a fucking $1 million in the stock market. Like, you have so much other life to live.
And when you're not there, it's tough to think about that, because you think like, yes, oh man, if I hit 100,000, that's where I need to be. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, if I hit 10,000, whatever your goal is, right?
Yep.
If I hit the 10,000, that's where I need to be. I'm playing in five figures. I'm chilling. I'm a player now. Whatever. It's all good. Blah, 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 blah. Or if I get to 100, or if I get to 1 million, right? And in the interim, when you make that your sole reason for living, you're missing out on all this other shit. If it's the thing you think about all day, every day, you know, look, and I realize that's how a lot of brilliant people get started too, with businesses and stuff like that. And, you know, they make it their life. They immerse themselves in it. And some people go on to be fantastic successes because of that. But you got to realize that you're sacrificing a lot of your personal well-being. And the other thing too is there's a mental game here at play that a lot of people don't talk about. And that is, if you're kind of operating in this hyper alert fight or flight mode all the time, where this is the only thing that matters. And for me, you know, this is a story that rings true for me, man, because I went to therapy for years after feeling, you know, just worried about just fucking money, worried about, you know, other parts of my life nonstop, man. I would wake up in the morning and worry whether or not today would be the day that an asteroid would hit the earth and I would die. As if when that happens, any fucking, like, there was anything I could do about it. You know, we talked about this on the last podcast, right? Like, as if there was any fucking thing I could do about it, right? And, like, you start to realize, man, when you start to let a lot of that shit go, you start to free up a lot of space in your head, man. And the crazy thing that happens is when you start to breathe and you start to act from a place of some calm and some consideration instead of panic and, you know, constant pressure to reach whatever goal it is that you want to get to, when you ease off the gas pedal a little bit, man, it's like redlining a fucking engine, right? Like, you're going to put something in third gear and you're going to redline it at 9,000 RPMs. You're not going to get the same performance out of the engine that you're going to get by maybe putting it to, you know, 6 or 7,000 RPM and then shifting, right? Like, you're just going to overwork the engine and ultimately the car's going to just fucking blow up. The transmission's going to give. The engine's going to give. You know, you can't overclock your fucking brain like that. You have to just keep your brain clocked at the speed that it's supposed to be clocked at. And people don't realize if you start to calm down, whatever it takes for you. You know, for me, I like to meditate. I like jujitsu. I like to go to the park next to my house and feed the ducks. I mean, I know that sounds fucking stupid, but I do it all the time, man. I like to play chess. I like to, you know, breathe using my belly. You know, I like to chew my food slowly. That's another thing, man. I was always rushing to eat. Now I'm making sure, you know, I know this stuff sounds so stupid, but I'm chewing each bite 25, 30 times. I'm tasting things. I'm trying to enjoy, like, what things feel like in the moment, what things taste like in the moment. Those types of things, man, when you calm yourself down and you realize that can be done, what happens is your performance, man, can actually get better. People think you got to redline your fucking self to get the maximum of performance. But your efficiency, man. When you talk about efficiency, Lucci, your efficiency is arguably at your best when you do back off a little bit and you do calm down. And that goes for trading, man. Because a lot of times I blew up or came close to blowing up. What was the situation, man? It was chasing. It was, I don't give a fuck. You know, it's this, that, and the other. Oh, this is definitely got to make this move because I think it's, you know, I remember years ago, many years ago, I was trading options in BlackBerry, long time ago, and weeklies. And they had, I forget what had happened, but they had just put out some good piece of news. And I don't, I can't remember what the stock was at, but let's say it was at eight. And, you know, on Wednesday or Thursday was trading 860 and the nines were going off for a penny. And I was like, you know what? It's got to go. Like, I got to just keep hammering these nines because it's gonna, you know, it's going to happen today. And I wake up on Thursday and be like, well, today's going to be the day. It's got to happen. You know, I can't believe they're giving these nines away for a penny, man. I can't believe they're giving them away for a penny. And then you, Thursday, you know, you get to the end of that trading day, you're looking at the fucking chart and the Dow's up, but that thing's just flat, you know, and you're like, how the fuck, you know, you keep waiting for that pop in the tape, right? You keep waiting for the fucking volume pop to come in and to see the equity pop, and it just doesn't happen. And Thursday goes by, and then Friday all of a sudden, and then, man, you're watching that fucking theta decay on Friday, man, and it's just every 10 minutes goes by, and you're down another every fucking tick. Oh, my God. And you get to the end of that day, and what's fucking left at the end of that day at that desk? You know? Nothing. You're wondering what the fuck happened over the last 72 hours that I could throw away however much I threw away on something like this, man. And that's a shit feeling after that happens. And it's a tough lesson and one that a lot of people have to learn. But you also got to know it can get better. Being in a calm state of mind, though, you don't make that decision, right, Lucci?
You don't make that decision, man. You don't make that decision. You never make that decision because you can't. It's the fight or flight thing, man. You can't. You have to step away from that. You have to be able to breathe it out, just like what Chris was saying with his tricks, you know, to help himself be in the moment kind of thing. And all this stuff resonates with the right mentality and the right energy you want to bring to the market. But again, you're not going to understand that until you feel it. And once you feel it, like that was what happened to me literally to, you know, 2018, 2019. It was the realization that holy shit, all this time I've been chasing after my own fucking tail. All I had to do was just sit back and let this stuff come to me. And I know that sounds like, it sounds like that damn book that came out, the Secret. You know, remember when The Secret came out, like 2013 or 2012? Everybody was like, you just have to think it's going to happen and it'll happen. You just have to put that energy out there and it's going to fucking happen. It'll be attracted back to you. And although I understand it, you still had all these fucking people sitting around not doing shit and just saying, hey, think positive, think positive, think positive. And meanwhile, they weren't doing shit about their lives. They weren't changing anything. They weren't fucking doing a goddamn thing, man. So, you know, there's a little bit to be said about the simple fact that I came to this realization after being in fight or flight mode for 8 fucking years, man, for 8 years, just being like, yo, I got to make this money. I got to make this money. Every day I woke up like, yo, I got to make this money. I got to make this money. I got to make this money. And I did. And I had a lot of great experiences. And I, you know, I enjoyed a life with, you know, extra things and all that kind of nonsense. But I was never happy with anything. I was never at any point happy with anything. It was always a struggle. Every single day it was just a fucking ridiculous, ridiculous struggle. Like, when am I going to hit this? When am I going to get here? When am I going to get here? And then all of a sudden once you take that out of the equation, it's almost like what Chris was saying. It's like you relearn how to live life. It's like being a kid and you're just kind of looking at everything with this 1-year-old set of eyes, and you're just like, holy shit, man, I can breathe, man. Just let me just sit here. Let me just sit here and feed some goddamn ducks, man, without looking at my fucking phone, without looking at this, without looking at that. And it's an amazing it really is an amazing feeling. And what Chris was saying about your performance going up, like, you guys, again, we could sit here and say this shit all along, but you guys will feel it when it happens to you. And when it happens to you, you're going to remember this motherfucking podcast and you're going to remember Lucci and QTR saying this is what was going to happen. And you were always meant to get there in the first fucking place. So all that fight or flight you're doing right now, It's great. It's what you need to do in order to get to this place of just peace and tranquility, of just this place where you're like, okay, I know this thing is doing this, and, you know, I'm just kind of watching these stocks or whatever, and then when this happens, boom, I'm going to hop in, and you're not attached to these things happening, and you're going to see your account slowly change, the way you trade change, the way you make decisions change, all that shit is going to change, and those numbers that you had that you were so forcibly trying to get to, you're going to hit all those fucking numbers. It will fucking happen,
and you might start to realize you've already won.
Exactly. And that's,
you know what I mean, and that's a fucked up feeling too, when you're like, well, all right, I'm not doing that bad anyways right now. You know, exactly. You start reading those articles, like 90% of Americans don't have $150 in their savings account. And you're like, yep. Oh, I'm doing better than those guys. You know, like, and it's just, you start to realize maybe things aren't as bad as you think they are. And maybe where you're at isn't that bad. So maybe, you know, having a little bit more would be, I guess, a little bit nicer. But, you know, losing 3%, 4% tomorrow, it's not going to change anything. Making 3%, 4% tomorrow is not going to change anything profoundly. I mean, you want to be cognizant of it. You want to make sure that you're not doing anything crazy. But you just look at it. Hey, man, listen, there was a time, Lucci, where I couldn't imagine. And, of course, this is when I had no fucking money, right? I couldn't imagine sitting in front of a desk, not sitting in front of the desk at 9:30 for the open. I thought if I wasn't sitting there watching the fucking cash open at 9:30, that I was going to miss something. You know, I had to watch that fucking thing light up, and I had to watch, you know, this stock go up, that one go down. You know, what's the trend going to be for the day? I'm going to figure it all out in the first 2 minutes of trading, right? But I got to be there, otherwise I'm going to miss it. And you start to realize, man, like, that shit's not necessary. Like, today I actually got up, I did some work this morning, like, before the cash open. You know, I looked over at the futures. Okay, they're up, you know, 130, whatever, 140 on the Dow. And that was it. I went back to my work, whatever. Got done with what I was doing, or got to a stopping point. I said, it's time to go get my coffee. Went out, got my coffee, went to Wawa, made my little chat with the lady at the register that I like. Got back down to my car, sat in my car, looked at my clock. And I was like, all right, it's 9:46. So I'm like, wonder what's happening in the market. You know, like, market's been open for 16 minutes. I wonder how things are going. You know, and the crazy thing is, wherever they are at 9:46 isn't where they're going to be at fucking, you know, 3:46. So it doesn't matter. You know, yep. Like, some days I just think, all right, maybe I'll check in an hour or two. Maybe I'll go, you know, whatever. Or maybe I'll go do some more work. Or maybe I'll go grab a bagel and I'll check in an hour or two. And, man, when you let go like that, it works wonders for your mental health. It works wonders for how you trade, how you think about things. And, you know, you get so scared of bad surprises when you leave the screen for 30 minutes. I can't go get a fucking donut because what happens if X and X position I have starts to get clobbered? Well, if you're managing your risk the right way, there shouldn't be a situation where that happens, number one. So either you don't have your options spread on right, or you've allocated too much capital to a directional, you know, vanilla position.
Yep.
So that shouldn't be an option, but you do worry about it. But also you forget too, hey man, sometimes you can leave and come back in an hour and things look better.
Yep. You know? 100%. And you know, another thing to note is, like, you're not always going to be – once you hit this place of you know, of fresh air and all this kind of stuff, we're not saying that you're going to – you're done with the struggle. We're not saying that it's over. You know what I'm saying? That it's never going to come back and all that kind of stuff. This is shit that – it's always going to come back. We're human beings. We're ups and downs. This is the name of the game. You know, you might end up in a place where you start feeling like you're going backwards and you're starting to make shitty decisions again. But – if you get to that place of that sort of fresh air place, you know, you're going to be able to look at yourself at those times where it happens again And you're going to be able to stop that from happening.
Right.
You're going to be able to cut it off. You're going to be able to see it. You're going to be able to, because you know yourself that well at that point, you're just like, all right, I'm doing it again. I'm doing it again. I know where this road leads. Let's fucking bail. Let's jump ship and bail here before we know what the inevitable is going to happen if we keep fighting this situation. And that's unfortunately what we have to do in order to realize there's another way to play the game. Instead of coming in here looking at these freaking green ticks and red ticks every single second and unable to take a piss, I can't tell you how many times in my chat room, like, people are like, that's the most expensive shit I've ever taken, because they came back and boom, the shit was over. You know, but again, like, it's those emotions. It's those emotions. It's all that attachment that you have right now to numbers, to the lives you want to live, to all that kind of shit that slowly has to work itself out of your system for you to realize, like, yo, I don't need what I thought I did. I don't need all this kind of stuff. I don't need to come in here and make it. And then all of a sudden, that's when shit start happening. I mean, I always go back to that same fucking analogy of the girl, of you know, of guys trying to pick up girls. You know, there's a way that you can go about it where they'll always come back and say, yo, just act like you don't want them, or act like you don't need them, or something like that. There was always that saying or something that went around there. As I remember, since I was growing up, it was like, yo, just act like you don't need them. I didn't know how to do that. I did not know how to do that. I had no idea what that even meant. You know, so I was always trying to force it. I was always trying to say too much or do too much or something, and then I would just ruin the situation anyway.
The worst.
You know what I'm saying?
I would just
ruin the situation anyway, and it's the same fucking thing with trading, man.
Yeah, baby, I'll get the movie tickets, baby. Yeah, no problem, baby. I'll come pick you up at your house, baby. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Oh, you want to spend time with this other guy? Yeah, I'm sure you guys are just friends. It's no problem.
All that.
Oh, yeah, you want to hang out with him on your birthday too? I'm fine with that, baby. You know, I'm an understanding partner.
All that,
next thing
man.
You know, you look up, you're like, what the fuck happened to my girl? What's going on? I got no money and she's spending her birthday with some other guy. I didn't do this right.
Exactly, man. And you just, you just trying to do too much. I would always, and like Chris was saying, the micromanaging or whatever, like anytime I try to micromanage, even saying Lucci, like the shit that needs to get done, or just even pushing fucking social media content sometimes. Anytime I try to micromanage this stuff and I get emotional about when it should go out and how it should be and how it should look, I end up fucking it up, man. I end up fucking it all up, man. I fuck it all up, man. You know, so I kind of use that as an analogy literally for my life, for my trading, for everything, man. Just calm the fuck down, yo.
Right.
Just calm the fuck down.
Yeah, and then, you know, you create a gravity about yourself in that situation. And hopefully, you know, hopefully in the process you learn to actually be self-reliant and actually be self-assured and confident, you know, because those are the things that ultimately at the end of the day, you know, that's what's going to draw people to you, whether you're looking for a relationship or whether you're looking for business relationships. You know, I didn't make some of the friends that I made in the business who are, you know, relatively well-known people by going up to them and being like, oh, sir, you're so fucking great. Oh, God, it's so nice to meet you. Can I get you a water or a coffee, sir? You know, I fucking walked in there with my, you know, tattoos hanging out and my fucking, I said, look, here's what I'm doing. And I'm kind of a degenerate and a little rough around the edges. You take me as I am or not. You know, I go back to sitting on the couch and playing Xbox. I'm having a pretty good time doing that. So it's, you know, it's like a win-win situation for me, right?
Indeed.
Like,
indeed.
I got the little condo. I got the nice couch and a big TV. I don't fucking need too much more, man. I like to work out. I like to exercise. So I'm happy pretty much all the time, man. I'm a fucking happy dude. So when you adopt that attitude and you become, I don't know if I said this on one of our previous podcasts, but one of my old friends told me, he gave me this compliment. He was like, you're the rock that people break themselves on, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years ago, he told me that. And I was just like, man, that's it. You got to get to that spot. You got to get to that spot where you're just, you know, you don't have to be cocky. You don't have to have an ego. You can be respectful. You can be humble. You can have humility, but you got to be secure with yourself. And, you know, that finding that place of calm and getting out of that fight or flight mode and thinking, oh, I need X and X and X to whatever to be the guy I want to be or to be the woman I want to be or to get the person I want to get with or whatever. It's all bullshit, man. It's all nonsense, man. What you have inside of you, you know, look, there are people out there that are going to love the story of, you know, you're 24 and you just blew up and I'm trying to fucking put some scratch back together and whatever. I put together $500 in 6 months to start trading again and I'm going to do whatever differently, or I'm in this hole now. You know, that story, there's nothing to be ashamed of in those stories, man. It's all part of a bigger story, right? And I think the unique thing about me and you is a lot of these kind of existential realizations that we've both had, you know, since we've known each other for years, like 7 or 8 years. But I mean, we became pretty good buddies, I'd say probably like 2-3 years ago, where, you know, we've met each other in person and, you know, we start talking outside of Twitter and shit like that. And, you know, I really feel like maybe 3 years ago, we kind of hit this spot together, man. I remember, you know, I know for certain we're not looking at the markets and looking at our lives the way that we did 3 years before that. And that's why I thought it would be so good to have you on to have this discussion, man, because I feel like mentally, you know, we've both kind of turned that page a little bit. Yes, we'll fuck up in the future, man, definitely.
Of course.
I mean, that's growth, right? That's life. But the other thing, and there's people ahead of us, man, mentally, philosophically, ideologically, from a professional standpoint, that could be putting a podcast right down right now that would be like nectar to us, man. That would be 100%. Mentoring us, and hopefully the same way that this shit will hopefully do that for some people that were in a spot, you know, I was in 10 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, man. 100%, man. I want to actually throw out another story of a big ass loss that I took as well. Like 2009, after the market started to come back, that was like my first big run. I went on a run. I made like $3 million just buying, you know, Citigroup, Las Vegas Sands at $1, selling it at $4, buying it again at $4, selling it at $8. In reality, I should have just held everything to fucking today and I'd be, you know what I'm saying? I'd be wherever the fuck that is. But I gave most of the money to my father, and then I had maybe a mil left, right, to trade. I had more like a mil left to live, and then some to trade. So I kind of took out like $400 or $500 grand to live, and you know, that was my first taste of money, and it all came at one time. So immediately I got the apartment. That Audi S5 had just come out. That right. S5 just came out. So I got one of those. I had a Q5 too, so I had a Q. I was just in love with those cars, and I had the Q5 too with the first time it came out, and you know, so I had maybe $500,000 trading, and then I started just traveling and doing all kinds of shit, and then when I came back to trading, one trade, I got cocky on SPY. I think I was shorting something, and we just kept going up. I just kept adding to this position. I kept adding. You know, I took like a $400,000 loss, and it just wiped me out, man. It just wiped me out. And in reality, like, it put me in a battle with my father because I didn't have any chips left, and he was kind of in a situation where he was just like, son, this is for my life here. This is not to, you know, this shit ain't to gamble or whatever. Right. And I was pissed that he was afraid to make that, you know, to make that jump or whatever, to just give me another friggin' $500,000. I was like, dude, you have enough. Just shut the fuck up and give me another friggin' line over here. Give me $500,000. And he wouldn't do it, man. He wouldn't do it. And you know, and I think I had a lot of resentment for a long time, man, because I was like, yo, I did this shit. You know, it was me that took us out of here because, you know, the crash just hit him really hard. He was about to retire and there was nothing, you know, and again, he was attached to being okay with, let's say, you know, $500,000, $700,000 and not having to work. And I get all this money back and you know, he was just like, no, we have to keep this here. We got to keep the family okay just in case any of this shit happens again. And I didn't realize, like, my father is talking about – he's coming from a world where he starved. He legit, like, didn't have food for 5 days or 10 days sometimes growing up in freaking India. And that's his conditioning. You know what I'm saying? So when he came to this country, he came to this country with fucking nothing. And he always had that fear in the back of his head that, you know, everything would just disappear and he'd be back in the gutter.
Right.
You know, and that's where he's speaking from. Meanwhile, I'm the kid who's never had to fucking starve.
Right.
Who's never had any of these issues ever. You know, who's never had to deal with any of this stuff whatsoever. I couldn't even understand why this man, like, wouldn't just kick me another line so that I could freaking trade the damn thing. So it kind of caused a lot of resentment between me and him. And I had to go back. I literally had to go back. I didn't go back to work per se, but that's when I was motivated enough to start Sang Lucci. So the creation of Sang Lucci was off the backs of that. It was me just writing financial satire, and it was just me writing bullshit and just talking shit on Twitter, and that all of a sudden created a little world where I got some chunk of I got a little bit of chunk of change, you know, 50,000 or 100,000 again to play with. And then boom, you know, that started my rise, and that's how we ended up in New York for the second shot, you know, at starting a hedge fund and going a little bit bigger. And so it kind of happened. The same thing happened to me, you know, twice here. The same thing happened to me twice in order for me to realize the things that I needed to realize. So again, me and Chris are not telling you, you know, how it's going to end up working for you and shit. You know, you might have to lose everything you have three times. You might have to lose everything you have five times. Some of you guys won't ever
have get to it, lose. Right.
They won't ever have to lose everything. You know, it really all depends upon your personality, your attachments, your emotions, your ego. It depends on all of that shit. And the sooner you start having conversations with yourself and understanding who you are, what you really need, understanding who's pulling you in what directions, and what's actually worth your time and all that kind of shit, that's when the consistency will come,
right,
you know, from your trading. Anything before that, like you know, that risk is always going to be on the table. That risk is always going to be on the fucking table. It really will, you know, so... That's
and it's a combination for some people. You know, it's a number. They got to blow up four times and then grow up 5 years. You know, I think there's a formula in there for most people. Some people, like you said, they never need to blow up to get it. Some people, they get it at age 18. Some people will have to blow up 50 times and they get it at age 45 or 55. You know, yeah. Like it's just you just hopefully. I mean, I was thinking about it just earlier while you're telling that story, trying to figure out, like, what is it that allowed me to kind of turn the corner? Like, yeah. You know, I did kind of change my lifestyle a little bit. Like I said, I mentioned I went to therapy for some years, which really helped out talking to a therapist. And like, which, by the way, everybody should do, whether you need it or you don't need it. Everybody needs to talk to somebody, man. It makes a huge difference. But anyways, it was just kind of like making some major shifts on a fundamental kind of bedrock of my life level that I think combined with just general maturity. And, you know, just getting sick and tired of fucking up. I mean, you get to a point where you just, I don't know, I just got so fucking sick of it. I'm like, I'm never fucking doing this again. Like, and I've said that, you know, a couple of times, but I don't know, I meant it. I said it a little bit differently this time, you know, like that shit's just not fucking happening again. Like, I'm not fucking going back there. And I think it's a combination of maturity, and I think it's a combination of trial and error, too, for most people. There are some exceptions, the people that will never get it and the people that never need anything to happen to get it. But I think for most people, I think if you're listening to this, you probably fall in the group of, you know, it's probably going to happen. And maybe hopefully as you mature and you start to think differently, your brain gets wired a little bit differently, your outlook and your perspective on life. I mean, you look at things a hell of a lot differently when you're 22 than you do when you're 37, you know, just about life in general. And just like, perfect example, your father looked at that money in a totally different way than you looked at that money, right?
Because totally different, man. Totally.
Dude couldn't
different.
Eat for 5 or 10 days and had fucking nothing to fall back on, right? And here you are, the fucking kid that's had everything, you know, totally running off at the mouth, being like, dude, what's another $500,000? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, 99% of these people listening to this podcast never had $500,000 and they're never going to have $500,000 or anywhere fucking close to it, you know? So a lot of it has to do with perspective, right?
Yep. And in my head, like $500,000 was nothing, man. It was nothing, man. It was like, what are we? Why are we even having this conversation? But in reality, he was the smart man at that moment because my emotions, I would have lost that $500,000, bro.
Right.
I would have lost that $500,000, no question, because I was looking at it like, hey, I took a loss in this equation. You know, now the family is good, but I don't have $2 million. I don't have $3 million. I don't have none of this shit. So I need to get back there. So immediately I went back into freaking grind mode like crazy. Like, we could just got to flip this shit. And then when you coming off that big win, you think you're the fucking man. Markets change too. They're not moving as much as they were. So, you know, you just not even trying to pay attention to that. You just like, where's this money at? Where's this money at? Where's this money at? He was right, man. I would have lost it. I would have lost it, bro. Would have fucking lost it, man.
So if you just blew up, or you blown up in the past, what do you got to remember, Lucci?
Yeah. So I think there's some stages here. There's some stages, and let me put it to you this way. Let's consider the fact that everybody is different. Everybody's going to react a little bit differently. We know that the act of blowing up fucking sucks. We know that the act of thinking about what you need to do to get back something, some level of something, it sucks to have to think like that. So I think the number one thing is never feeling like you have to get back to a certain level, because the more you're attached to getting back, let's say the losses that you just took, maybe it's $500,000, maybe it's 10,000, maybe it's freaking $2,000. The more you think and the more you're obsessed with the idea of, damn, I just got to make that money back, it's really going to destroy your decision making. You know, it's really going to destroy your chances as well of making money in general, not necessarily making that money back, but just making money in general. So the really important thing is to step back and allow the fucking pain to come, and really just allow the pain to come, to hit your body, to hit, you know, to hit everything, and just allow it to work through your body and allow it to work through your energy.
Just know that if you just blew up, blown up, meaning like you got fucking nothing, except maybe it's probably some debt, right? That's the worst you're going to be. Shit ain't going to get fucking worse from right there. Are you still alive? Can you still blink your eyes? Can you still taste the fucking potato when you eat it? Can you still move your arms around? You know what I mean? Can you still breathe? Can you still think? You still have sovereignty over your own mind? Yes, all those things, good. You're still alive. You're still with us. The numbers on the fucking page suck right now, but you've already fucked up. So let's take that first step from there.
100%. So, and then from that step, after you've let it, you know, work through your system, after you felt like shit, maybe you got to sit at home on your freaking couch watching the same movie over and over again and watching, you know, I don't know what you have to do to woosah that shit out, but whatever it is for you, however long that takes, you know, that's what you got to go through. But then make sure you continue to trick your mind. Like, your mind is going to want you to shut down.
Yep.
Your mind is going to want you to eat like shit. Your mind is going to want you to fly to every piece of comfort that is around you. It's going to make you want to call your fucking ex that you fucking hate. But you're just going to call her anyway because she's the only one that'll fucking listen to your dumb ass anyway. You know what I mean? It's going to make you flock to all that shit. And you have to fight it. You have to fight it. You got to learn to get your ass in the gym. You got to learn to just do these little things, even if it's fucking brushing your teeth or flossing. Yep. Just something as simple as what QTR was saying, feeding some goddamn ducks, going to take a fucking run, enjoying something to some capacity. You gotta find that back, because that's life right there. That's life right there, and that's what's going to keep you. That's what's going to keep you with a little bit of fucking pep in your step. That's the only thing that's going to keep you alive through this period where, you know, your mind is going to tell you, hey, you're a piece of shit. You fucked up. that, you know, let's just shut this whole thing down and let's just stop. Let's just stop right now.
And after you blow up, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't want you going on to the next thought real quick.
No doubt.
After you blow up, that's when you're the most vulnerable to fall back into whatever. Like you just brought up the example, the ex-girlfriend of eating like shit. Dude, there's never going to be a spot where you're more vulnerable to start compounding fucking terrible decisions than after you make one huge terrible decision. Because all you think at that point is, at this point, fuck it. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? What's another fucking bag of chips? What's another pint of ice cream? And, you know, oftentimes when you're hurting, you want, like you say, you want to go back to that one person that, like, you know, if I was with this person, shit would be better. When you know damn well, ultimately, that shit wasn't supposed to work out for a reason. But because the pain is there, you want a quick fix. And avoiding those things is going to be what's insanely difficult at that moment until you start to take what is going to be step one of probably a million in the right direction. You got to remember that if you just blew up, you're at the spot right now where you're arguably the most fucking emotionally vulnerable than you've been. So that's why it's so much more crucial to fucking, and if you got to turn this shit on repeat and play it backwards again and listen to it, that's why it's arguably the most crucial time to get up and say, bang, this is the opportunity to make the checklist of the things that I'm going to do on a daily basis from this point on, whether it's I'm going to wake up early and I'm going to fucking work out in the morning, I'm going to eat right, I'm going to change my fucking dietary lifestyle, I'm going to change my relationship with my family, my relationship with this, that, and the other, and definitely how your relationship with money works. That's the time to do it, man. It's a fucking opportunity in disguise to make all the major changes that you're capable of and have thought about doing for a while. Go ahead, Lucci.
Absolutely. Okay. So then you hit that point. You're kind of forcing yourself to trick your mind and to do the things that you know you need to do. At some point here, you're going to get your confidence back. You're going to get your confidence back, and there's going to be a little realization that, hey, you know what? What happened is what happened, and I can't do nothing to change that shit. I'm here, and you're slowly going to start to realize, and that's going to bring a little bit of the confidence back. And when that happens, That's all she wrote. Once that confidence comes back, you're already going to start making decisions and coming up with ideas and starting to move forward on some new frontiers or some new way of thinking or a new way or a new strategy or new risk management or whatever the hell it is. And you're going to start figuring out the solutions to the problems that are sitting there in front of you. It'll literally just start cascading right then and there. But it's the realization and the confidence that's what you're after. Because once you get those two back, then there's nothing to stop you right there. You're just going to look at it and be like, all right, I took this fucking loss. The shit ain't over. I can make it back again, or I can do whatever I need to do. And that's when shit just starts really unfolding here for you.
When you start getting back on that good path too, it's so important to never forget what it felt like when shit was horribly wrong, man. My tattoo artist, this guy, Ned DeLeon, fantastic fucking guy and the best tattoo artist I've ever had in my life. He's at Big G's Tattoo in Atlantic City on the boardwalk. But he, you know, Ned has been sober for years and he's got this photo of himself. I hope this isn't too personal, Ned, but I don't think it is. He's got this photo of himself hanging over his tattoo shit where he gets his needles and everything prepped up of him, you know, at the shop maybe like 5-6 years prior. Man, just looking like shit, man, just sitting in a chair. He told me he was like so fucking hungover. He had gone out. He was drinking. I don't know if he was doing anything else, but he had a terrible night. And underneath it, it just says, don't go back. That's it. It just says, don't go back. And it's so important to have that fucking reminder. Don't go back. Right? So all these things that you started to build up again, this momentum, whether it's your diet, whether it's your mental health, whether it's you've changed your relationship with your family, whether it's, you know, the amount of time that you're exercising, the way that you're managing your money, all this stuff that you've been taking now step by step by step from fucking ground fucking zero. You've lived through every minute, every hour, every second, every day of it, every month of it, and maybe even every year of it at this point. You've put that fucking building kind of back together. And now you just can't go back. You can't knock that building over again. And whatever the fuck you got to do to remind yourself of that, you got to do it, you know, because that's got to keep you, because the confidence, man, turns from, hey, I feel a little bit better today to, man, it's time to go fucking hog wild again very, very quickly.
Yo, that's literally as quick as it. That's why I'm saying that's the only step. I mean, I could come up with another, you know, two or three steps, but literally when that confidence comes back and you've made amends with what happened and you've literally just realized that it was you and, you know, you're the only one to blame and all that kind of shit. Once you get over all of that, that confidence is slowly going to start to come back. And when it does, that's it. That's it. You're just going to start coming up with solutions and you're not going to think it's the end of the fucking world. You're never going to think these things again. And it's just 0 to 100. That's what it's going to look like. And boom, you know, and pretty soon you'll be out of that shitty place that you thought would never disappear. And life is going to give you, you know, the things that you were looking for and all that kind of shit in different ways. It's going to give you different realizations. That's just how it's going to work. So it really all just comes down to that confidence and those realizations.
And you're going to fucking get there. You're going to bounce back, exactly. Man. Everybody's got that video game that they played. For me, it was I had YouTube videos that I listened to, man. I remember going and running. Canal Decide did something at Traders for a Cause like 5-6 years ago where he gave this nice little like 20-minute motivational thing about blowing up, whatever. And I hadn't blown up, but things weren't going the way that I liked. And I would just remember I would go for a run, man, and I would listen to that every day over and over. And I don't even think I ever told Canal this, but like every day I would listen to this fucking thing. Like, man, I'm like, this dude's killing it. He's killing it. He understands completely how I feel, whatever. This dude's been there, right? Which is one of the things that is so important that I wanted to get across from doing this podcast is like, you feel like fucking shit. We have all been there, man. You know what I mean? And what we're saying right now is shit is going to get better. You will fucking bounce back. And if you need to turn the shit on repeat over and over and over again, and you got to listen to it for a week or for a month, or maybe you don't even ever want to listen to it again, whatever. You can listen to it until that day where you fucking wake up and you're like, man, you know what? Feel pretty good today. Today's the day I don't need to go out and listen to the lecture. Maybe I'll just go feed the ducks or whatever, you know? But Lucci has bounced back. I have bounced back. Everybody has bounced back in this industry. You're only going to get to the top by, you know, bouncing back. And sometimes, you know, the top isn't even where you guys think it is. Some of you are already at the top already, man. You guys don't even realize it. So
absolutely. And I think last point I want to make here before we close all this out, man, QTR podcast, like I want this place, just the fact that Chris hit me up and asked me to do this shit is so important to me too, because like I said before, like I got to deal with a lot of people right now, and I don't want to say I got to deal with it like it's a bad thing, but because of the vibe I'm putting out there on social media, people open up to me without knowing a fucking damn thing about me. They don't know my name. They don't know anything about me, but they open right up to me just because I do it out there for everybody else. Chris does it. I do it. A lot of people don't do it. If you guys are listening to this fucking podcast and you got a great story for us, you fucking call QTR up, hit him up on the DM or whatever, and have him bring you on this motherfucking show. We want to hear about it. Everybody in our game, we want to hear about it. These are the stories that we want to hear about, because these are the stories that are going to have the most impact on, you know, the next generation that comes back and out if you here
wanna,
and needs to hear it.
If you want to get in touch with Lucci, like he's talking about on that anonymous source where people are constantly hitting him up, fire up Grindr. You'll recognize his picture when you see him, man. Because that's the problem, man. You put yourself out there with no name and no nothing, man. But just that picture, that big, beautiful, bald head of yours, it's no wonder you're getting hit up 20 times a day.
Yo, what can I say, man? They love Lucci out here, man. They love Lucci.
It's true. I get DMs all the time, man. Yo, I just listen to you. And everybody that's listening to this that sends me DMs and shit, if I haven't gotten back to you, I'm sorry. But most of them I try to. And I just say, hey, thank you. I genuinely appreciate it. Things like that. And just know that that's me. And I'm reading your shit. And I do genuinely appreciate it. Unfortunately, there's no fucking more than 24 hours in a day. And I don't have time to answer fucking 50,000 messages a day, because I'm out here still grinding too. And Lucci is too. But I think important thing is we've been there. You will bounce back, and we got a lot of love for you if you're listening to this and you're in this situation.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
All right, Lucci, let's do it again soon. All right, brother?
We'll do, man. We'll do.
All right. Talk to you soon, man.
It is.
That was the one, the only Sang Lucci, man. Doesn't get better. I knew he would be the right guy for this, and I didn't even know any of those blowing up stories of his before I had him on, but I just had a feeling he had them, and also I knew he was going to be the guy that would open up and share those stories with us, and so I'm really appreciative that he did, and like I said, man, hopefully you haven't just blown up, and that's why you're not listening to this, but just know the risk is always there, and if you have, listen, it's going to get better, things are going to start moving in the right direction, you could do it right now, starting at the time you fucking turn off this podcast, go for a walk, do something, and things will get better, man. It happens. It's inevitable. It feels like shit sucks. We all know. We've all been there. And we've said everything that we need to say. I'm just repeating myself because that's what rambling degenerates do at this point. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I got a lot of shit lined up for January, baby, and I am fired the fuck up about it. But for now, happy new year, happy new decade. We're going to do this shit this year, folks, and we're going to do this shit this decade. But for right now, I'm the fuck out. Peace!